T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Great to have you here. We are in Champions Plaza outside of Oracle Arena, outside of the Coliseum. Both venues are up and active tonight. If you're coming to either the A's game or the Warriors game, you might want to start getting here in another hour or two because, again, we got big crowds coming in both places. Yeah. It's A's and Angels Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. We are going to get our last look at the Minnesota Timberwolves and what is becoming the final stretch of the NBA's regular season. The Golden State Warriors have now won 12 in a row, and they're going to try and keep it on going. The announcement that Kevin Durant is expected to return on Saturday just makes everything sound pretty darn good to me from where we're sitting right now. It was a great opening night for the Warriors. It was a great opening night for the A's. It was a terrible closing night for college basketball. And to talk about it all, oh, we are happy. It's Tony Bruno.
Don't give me no lines and keep your hands to yourself.
Oh, Tony, it was a great night here in Oakland. We had Ricky Henderson misquoting God and popping his collar during his own on-field dedication ceremony. It's possibly the most Oakland thing of all time that ever happened. It was beautiful.
Yes, and then don't forget Jose Canseco on the pregame show saying he wants to come back in DH now for the Oakland A's as well.
That is, he stopped on by our set too, an unannounced walk by from Jose Canseco, and he's not here to talk about the past, Tony. No, he's not here to talk. You know, here's the deal, though. You know, let me defend Jose Canseco for a minute, because there's no doubt this guy has played a lot of people for a fool in his day, but he was the first to the topic of truth when it came to steroids being rampant in Major League Baseball. I know it made him persona non grata, and he certainly tried to make a big buck off of it at the end of his career with his book and everything. And I don't think anyone's ever going to look at him the same. But to cast him out and not have him back and just declare him a liar is a complete rewritten history. Like, he's one of the only people, I believe.
You're absolutely right. And I wasn't taking a shot at him. He actually looked good. I saw a couple of him on TV. He's looking good, man. And I like the fact that, you know, that the A's and Dave Cavill is bringing back Ricky Henderson and allowing Jose Canseco. A lot of organizations don't do this. You know, the Phillies did it for a long time. They didn't honor Dick Allen and guys like that. And you got to embrace your history. And the A's have an unbelievable history. So I like the direction the A's are going in with the young players. And you mentioned Chris Davis, what, took him 16 games to hit his first home run. He hits two on opening night after not hitting a single one in spring training. So he's a great player. He had 42 homers last year, and he didn't get going until game 16.
Yeah, no, it was really, really impressive what he did last night. The fact that Melanson blows his first save opportunity for the Giants and Santiago Casilla shuts the door for the A's on opening night. It was just really a great opening day of baseball. I know no Giant fan was happy with the way that ended, but that was a fun opener for the Giants. The A's had their best opening night that anyone can remember in a real long time. We're out here, and it feels a little different, Tony. I mean, again, I don't think this feeling is going to last all season long, but I can't even remember the last time the feeling was this exciting about the A's. A guy tweeted me last night. He said, you know, I know we're only one game in, but I actually feel better right now than I did at any point during 2016. And that's good. That's what we're selling here. That's hope.
You know what it's all about? It's all about having young players that people can figure out. Kendall Graveman, here's a young, he's your ace now. You know, Chris Davis, you see he's an emerging star. And you can see the chemistry on this team. And Bob Melvin, as you mentioned, one game, he's going to go with the same lineup tonight. It's going to be a long season, but one thing's for sure. When you have young talent and you can see young stars developing right before your eyes, you know, you don't need to have 9 superstars when you roll out there on a Major League Baseball team. You just have a good core, get a couple of veterans in there, and then watch these guys meld together. And the A's look like one of those teams. I was watching the Phillies game with my mom last night, her 93rd season. Her 93rd opening day. And so
that
she
is
was,
fantastic.
You know, she's watching the young Phillies players. There's a bunch of guys no one's seen before. And I don't know Ryan Howard. And they're going through this metamorphosis of now. You got young players mixing in, and let's see what happens. So you always look for optimism when you had a dry spell. And the A's and the Phillies are pretty much in that same situation with some good young players, some good pitching, and who knows how far you can go.
Tony, I always get a little nervous for the NCAA tournament when it comes to that national championship game because much like the entree or the dessert at the restaurant, it's the last impression everyone gets. And I think everyone walked away feeling like, geez, that was a pretty forgettable NCAA tournament. It's maybe the most forgettable championship run the champ has ever had. North Carolina and Gonzaga played a nearly unwatchable brand of basketball for all kinds of reasons, execution and officiating last night. I wish the sport I love looked better, ended better.
Yeah, I mean, it was ugly, and I know the officials are part of the story of people saying Gonzaga was robbed. And the bottom line is it was an ugly game. And these are two teams that, let's be honest, as good as Carolina has been in their history, how many people had Carolina Gonzaga in their Final Four? And Vegas got absolutely slaughtered because everybody and their mother bet on Carolina last night, and they covered the number because it was a pretty close line. I think it was 1.5, and they won by about 6. But there's no doubt that Gonzaga was in the game, and it was ugly, and it shouldn't be that way. Especially after, that's why I didn't even bother going to the Final Four this year. I was in Arizona early. I didn't want to go back. But not that I knew it was going to be a bad game, but after last year's excitement of the Final Four, it would be pretty hard to match it, and it didn't match it this year at all.
The one and only Tony Romo, and I do say the one and only Tony because there's another Tony in the headlines today. Tony Romo is Wally Pipping Phil Simms. I mean, this is something else. I mean, I haven't seen a guy go from the number one booth to now you don't work here anymore, so we can replace you with someone who's never done it before. What do you think of Tony Romo hanging up the Spurs and heading to the microphone?
I applaud him, you know, because a lot of people are trying to figure out which team he was going to go to. And, you know, he'll always be a Dallas Cowboy. To me, he didn't win any Super Bowls. You know, the guy had a lot of injuries, and the guy had some unbelievable plays. He turned some balls over in big games, didn't win a lot of playoff games. But the guy was a warrior. And to me, that's the way you go out. If I was Tony Romo, I'm trying to put myself in his position, which I can't. But thinking about if I were in his shoes, I would have done the same thing. I would have said, you know what, why go somewhere else and then possibly tarnish? If I go to Denver or somewhere else and I can't deliver a Super Bowl, does that tarnish his history? No, but it doesn't help. And now he's still healthy. You know, he doesn't have to worry about going through another training camp, taking a beating, suffering another injury in training, like he did last year in training camp. So, to me, it's a smart move. The shocking part is that not only did he announce his retirement, and you know this didn't just happen in a matter of hours. I mean, the Cowboys were going to release him, and they told him so. And so he was already – either he was working the phones or CBS made the phone call and put a little birdie in his ear, because stuff like this doesn't happen overnight. You don't get released and then immediately offer the number one job when you haven't done it at all at any level.
Well, look at it this way. Within an hour of this becoming public, there was a picture of him wearing a CBS blazer tailored perfectly. That did not come off the rack, Tony. They sent that about a week ago. This has been in the works for some time. You can tell by the CBS Sports Network jacket. You know, this really is one of my absolute favorite times of the year. Opening day was fantastic. We had the NCAA, the Final Four. We got the NFL draft coming. The NBA playoffs are on the way. You got Steph Curry singing karaoke in the car with James Corbin going through the entire Disney repertoire. But there's one other song that I would like to end this conversation with, and it's one of the single greatest songs in the history of sports music. Elena, if you would, please.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Jim Nantz moving from Phoenix Glendale, Arizona to Augusta National, ready with hushed tones to deliver the chimed-in birds, not birdies, the CBS birds. I wonder if Tony Romo will be chirping on the Masters broadcast. They have to bring him into the booth, don't you think, this weekend at Augusta?
Let's go to 16, where Vern Lundquist and Tony Romo are in front of Rays Creek and let's see what happens. Oh, I think that that's absolutely what slam dunked this deal this week. CBS basically said, look, Tony, we know Fox is coming after you. It's tough to walk away from the Dallas Cowboys. But would you like to be among the patrons eating pimento cheese sandwiches? Would you, Tony? And he said, let's get it done. Where do I sign? Take me to Butler Cabin. That's where I'll sign my deal, CBS.
Did he have a green jacket on, or was it just a regular maroon? Regular. Navy blue CBS. I think they gave him Brett Musburger's old NFL Today jacket that they had in mothballs. But how about poor Phil Simms? I mean, Phil Simms has been ripped for years by fans. And then to go from the number one guy, the number one analyst, to out the door, I mean, that's, you want to talk about a slap in the face. Wow.
That is tough. I mean, and I know that they've said that they're going to reassign him or find another assignment. The number one booth is the assignment, and he's obviously getting demoted. There's no way to spin it in any other direction. I actually think that I like Tony Romo, having never heard him once do it, more than I like Phil Simms, because I know where that goes, and he wasn't very good. I didn't hate Phil Simms as much as most. But, you know, Romo left the door open saying, you know, should, you know, the Cowboys need me. And I couldn't help but think, Tony, how awkward would that call be to the Simms house from CBS? hey, Phil, Dak rolled his ankle. Tony's going back to Dallas. Can you get to Minnesota by week 7? Because that's where we're going to pick it up and have you run out the rest of the year. That would be awkward.
Yeah, who's the number two guy at CBS? I'm trying to think of all these booths because, you know, CBS has had a lot of changes over the last few years. You know, they blew up their set. You know, they got rid of Shannon Sharp and Dan Marino a couple of years ago. So, you know, it's been pretty stable for the most part on the Sunday NFL pregame shows. But CBS has probably had the most changes over the last few years.
Where do you rank Tony Romo on the most out-of-nowhere bona fide, totally legitimate Pro Bowler quarterback career? I think I got him number 3 all time behind Kurt Warner, who still takes the cake bagging groceries and playing for the Iowa Barnstormers. Then I think I got to go Tom Brady, because greatest quarterback of all time rarely goes in the 6th round, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then I think it's Tony Romo. I mean, it really, really is.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not a Cowboy fan, but Jerry Jones.
Oh, you're not? I had no idea, Tony. Thank you for clearing that up.
I want to make that perfectly clear, but I am objective when it comes to guys, you know, and how they played and left it all on the line. Tony Romo left it on the line. The guy got beaten, you know, he got beaten senseless. Year after year, the guy got hurt. And, you know, when you get hurt that many times, sooner or later, you say, you know what, it's not worth it. He's got kids, you know, he's married, he's got a young family, and you want to keep playing and risk, you know, having permanent damage to your back and neck area. So it's smart, but I agree with you. Although I saw a breakdown today, somebody broke down the 2004 quarterbacks, and even though what's his face in LA now, the San Diego Charger quarterback, Philip Rivers, statistically, is slightly better than Tony Romo. Remember, Philip Rivers was the number one pick. And so when you look at those two guys in the same year coming out in 2004, Rivers beats him, but not by that much when you talk about total numbers. So to be considered among, you know, Philip Rivers is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know whether Romo's a Hall of Famer because he doesn't have any of the playoff wins. He's got a lot of numbers, but is he a Hall of Famer? That's the big question, I guess, now.
He is the 4th all-time passer rating and the, what? He won 61% of his starts. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer when you measure him against the Hall of Fame standard at that position. But he's in the Hall of really good. He's in the Hall of
absolutely.
He was very, very good. Yeah, yeah.
So absolutely. And the fact, remember, Jerry Jones said it, Tony Romo was a miracle. I mean,
he was
nobody
a miracle.
Thought Tony Romo was going to be the guy.
Yeah, miracle.
Tony Romo. I remember that night in the bar when he said it exactly the way you just did, or the way Foster Brooks would say on many of those roasts back in the day in the Dean Martin roast days, Tony Romo was a miracle.
I'm glad these kids were here to hear that authentic frontier gibberish. Rabbit! Rabbit! Thank you. I'm glad you got that. Would you please recap our interview today with a little Masters music? Would you Butler Cabin our conversation today? Elena, if you would, please. I'm going to have Tony talk himself off from Butler Cabin. If you will, Tony, please.
Hello, friends. We are live at we're not at Butler Cabin. We are here on the practice tee at Augusta National. I'm Phil Simms. Well, no, Phil Simms is not here. Phil Simms is not here. Tony Romo will be here for the Pro-Am tomorrow. Incidentally, it's amazing how he got here so quickly, because Tony Romo, as you know, a great golfer and a great patron as well. That's pretty much my Jim Nance. I have to
that
rehearse my final round. I'm working on my I just got done with my one shining moment. You got to give me a break.
Tony,
you can't expect me to
always
come out with a one shining moment one night and then trying to do Butler Cabin and the green jacket ceremony less than 24 hours later.
Hey, the pressure of Augusta breaks a lot of men. There's nothing to be ashamed about, Tony. Thank you so much. A pleasure as always. Tony Romo. No, excuse me, Tony Bruno.
I was like, we just had Tony Romo on?
Tony Romo was unavailable. Tony Bruno was available, so that's why we talked to Tony Bruno from Butler Cabin.
That was fun.
Always good to have him on during Masters Week. I do. I love that tinkling piano so very, very much. A little bit later on.
There it is.
Hello, friends.
Hello.
It's so nice. It's so nice. It's the most calming song of all time. How about this? If you set this as your wake-up music, you wouldn't wake up. You just keep on sleeping.
Oh, yeah. You have a hard... Although, it might bring you up nice and gradual. You know, instead of like... Meh, meh, meh.
Right.
It's a good, like,
gentle,
the day is starting.
A gentle wake-up.
Yeah, I actually could... that's not a bad idea.
Always be nice to have someone wake you up by, like, playing a harp every morning.
They just show up in your bedroom.
Just, it'd be like literally dissolving from dreamland back to the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be like an actual real-life dissolve if in your corner of your bedroom you could hire someone to play a harp at about 8:45 every morning.
Is that what time you get up?
No, about 9:30 for me, but Jillian would want it to go off about 45 minutes before I get up.
Gotcha.
It'd be nice to be harped awake.
It would be lovely.
Instead of iPhone buzzed awake for
right.
just a change. I think it'd be very nice.
My alarm is birds chirping.
Of course it is.
Yes, it is.
Of course. I'm surprised.
That's how I wake up every day.
I'm surprised it's not like babies laughing and the smell of apple pie incorporated as well. You just are the most wholesome person I've ever met in my life. That's all there is to it. Shifting gears dramatically for the sake of this segment and for the sake of this getting on the record today, I want to talk a little bit about Tony Romo going to CBS, but not through the prism of Tony Romo. I want to talk about what people are saying it should mean for Colin Kaepernick. People are saying that now the next domino is clearly Colin Kaepernick. He is the next guy in line to get a job, and the whole quote-unquote clickbait blackballing of Colin Kaepernick is now officially going to be tested once and for all, and we'll see whether or not it is a true blackballing that he is going through. And there's a lot of people writing that story today. A lot of people want to advance that talking point because it's getting attention for their websites and their,
of course,
their own social justice warrior persona. Now, look, I am not here to tell you that what Colin Kaepernick did had any amount of nobility or was unnoble to it. We're not here to discuss what happened. We all know what happened. We're here to examine this situation, not in the utopia that people want to live in, but in the reality we're actually sharing together in this one life that is not a dress rehearsal. Okay? So, Colin Kaepernick, you tell me, is the next quarterback off the board? Well, let's go to the board and find out, shall we? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I think Jay Cutler gets a job before him. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick gets a job before him. I think Blaine Gabbert is going to get an offer before him. I think Sean Hill is going to get an offer before him. I would even go as far as to say Matt McGloin's phone might ring before his does. Charlie Whitehurst, backup quarterback Jesus, I bet you his phone rings before Colin Kaepernick's phone rings. RG3 might get a shot before Colin Kaepernick's phone rings. Is it because he's blackballed? You know what? Maybe in 5% of the offices, 10%, maybe he is. Maybe he is. But you know what else is going on? You got a lot of people checking the tape right now. And there's a lot of bad tape on Colin Kaepernick. Stuff that teams sit down to watch, they see it, and then there's all that other stuff. That's all I want to leave it as right now. I don't want to talk about the nuances of his protest, what he meant or didn't mean to do. That is irrelevant for the conversation we're having right now. You watch a lot of bad tape of Colin Kaepernick. You know he comes with more baggage than a luggage section at a department store. And so you're a GM, you're a coach, you watch Kaepernick, you consider the world that he created for himself, or if you want to say, well, it's just the world that he's reacting to. It wasn't his job in the NFL to react to the world, it's to react to defenses.
Right.
And as a coach and a GM are watching this together, they evaluate Colin, they put in that Chicago tape, they put in that Arizona tape, they put on any tape, and they find out that this guy is half the size he was 3 years ago, the last time he was decent in this league. So you got a guy whose playing style is a demerit, his now body type is a demerit, his concentration on other things in the world of football, noble or not, is irrelevant. It will be counted as a demerit. The attention that you would get for the quarterback play that you would receive makes the GM and the coach go, you know what? Put in that Sean Hill tape one more time. How bad is Jay Cutler's body language? Maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick was in a bad situation in New York. That's how football teams work in reality. No one wants to sign a going-nowhere-fast quarterback who is literally half his size he was 3 years ago, the last time he was good. And that's just the truth of it. It might not be friendly. It might not be what you wanted to hear, but that's the truth of it. Quarterback, more than any other position in the locker room, Gianna, cannot be another agenda-driven position. It needs to be a singular obsession. That's what teams are looking for. People who are pinioned underneath the boulder that they keep on pushing up the hill like Sisyphus. It never, ever ends improving. The last night before Peyton Manning's last game, do you think he just put his feet up and watched the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Absolutely not.
That guy was studying game tape like his life freaking depended on it, because that was his genetics, his DNA. That's who he was. Did Peyton Manning have other causes and care about other things? Yeah. Do I know what they are? No. Do you say he did a good job bringing awareness to it? I don't even care, because he was just a quarterback to me. Whether Colin Kaepernick did what he did out of selfish, secret reasons, nobility, guilt, race issues, own identity issues, it does not matter. Here's what does matter. Quarterback, the position, isn't in another agenda position. It needs to be a singular obsession. It must possess your mind, your free time, your downtime, your work time, your play time, your dream time, your leisure time, your crunch time, your game time, your halftime.
It needs to be your passion.
And that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
100%.
You're allowed to love your God a little, your wife a little, or family a tiny bit too. But it's football at that position more than anything else. If the next guy, if your guard is a socially aware guard, that's cool. No one talks to guards. He's not setting the tone for the entire team. If it's a cornerback, well, guys who play corner love to run their mouths and they're divas and they just love talking about themselves anyway. So whatever. That doesn't distract the team. The quarterback is judged by a different standard, fair or foul, and he needs to be the workhorse, the lead pony on all things football. What else? Nothing else. Football only. That's your quarterback. That's what teams are looking for. That's it. That's what teams are looking for. You know, you can cover sports from the prism of utopia. If everything were perfect and everything was fair in the world, this is how it would be. Sure. Tell your kids about how the world would be better if the world was like that, but then prepare them for the real world. The real world is Colin Kaepernick, every minute he knelt, was committing a level of career suicide that if you didn't see it coming, you're blind. Oh, but it shouldn't be that way. I agree. It is. Adults only. That's how this world works. I'm so sorry, but he's trying to change things. Yes. And he knew that he was going to be sacrificing his career on the field as an employable NFL entity, whether his skills declined if he made his entire career about something other than football.
Oh, this would be a completely different conversation if Cab had the best season of his life last season.
5,000-yard passer with 40 touchdowns. He is not blackballed today.
No.
Believe me that. Believe me. Colin could have been pro...
Whatever.
Whatever you wanted. Absolutely. There would have been no agenda that would have turned off any fan base if they thought, oh, seriously, 5,500 yards and 50 touchdowns? Sign him. Done. He can perform satanic rituals as far as I'm concerned. When we come on back, we're going to have our good friend, Tim Roy, join us. Tim Roy has seen so much bad basketball that there is no broadcaster in the world who deserves the most amount of wins over a three-year span than Tim Roy. And if he doesn't know how these own numbers tell the truth about that, we're going to share it with him next here on the Damon Brew Show.
He had an amazing night. That layup he hit in transition was unreal.
He was phenomenal. Shot amazing percentage. Felt like everything off his fingertips was going to go in.
A great game. He was phenomenal.
My left stroke just went viral.
Saved by McCaw. Grabbed by Draymond to Curry for three. Got it! Curry gets it back in the corner. Fakes for a toss. A look away three. Oh, my goodness.
He's humble and cocky at the same time, which is why we like him.
Pulls up, takes a three off the dribble, knocked it down. Steph Curry's just having his way right now. Curry down the right side, behind the back, dribbles in, goes in traffic, throws up a reverse. Oh, you're kidding me! Are you kidding me?
Nah, ain't nobody gonna say nothing. I'm old school, so like I said, you better be glad he shot that three and then go to the rack.
Be humble, holla. Sit down, holla. Be humble, holla.
The Golden State Warriors are cocky when they need to be. They are humble when they need to be. They are singing Disney songs for children when need be. They do it all, and hopefully they're ready to wear the supervillain outfit the rest of the way. Our best friend from the supervillains is the one and only Tim Roy, brought to you by Porsche of Fremont. Opportunity awaits at Porsche of Fremont. And, of course, if you're listening to Tim on the radio, remember, if you're wearing JBL wireless headphones, the official sound of the Warriors in 95.7 The Game, it's the only way Tim, who always sounds great, could possibly sound better. How you doing, buddy?
I am great. It's great to be here. It's great that we've got the dual event tonight. And, boy, what a great time to be a Bay Area sports fan.
It is.
Cool.
It's a great time for sports all around. I mean, right. It really is. You had the NCAA championship last night, opening day. The Masters is coming. It's one of my favorite times of the year. We'll have an NFL draft before the month is over. And thank goodness we're going to have a little playoff basketball before the month is over too, Tim. I know no one wants to undersell the last five games of the year, but are you already starting to drift away to what the playoffs are waiting?
No, not really, because Portland lost last night. They play in Utah tonight.
Yep.
So we don't really know. That's not set in stone. The Warriors still have to clinch number one. And also, there may be a certain player making an appearance maybe before the end of the regular season.
I heard about that.
Maybe.
I did.
We'll know Thursday when they reevaluate it.
On hearing that is going to be a reality. And that's a very good thing. Knocking the rust off Durant before the playoffs start just sounds like a great opportunity to reincorporate him. How smoothly do you think it's going to go?
I think it'll be smooth. I think there'll be, there may be moments where it doesn't look great, but I think it's on the whole, I think it's going to work out just fine, because it's not like he's coming in for the first time. It's not like he was hurt all year and
right
now is joining the team. I mean, we were 50-9 when he went down. And so I think he fit in pretty well.
Can we talk about unwritten rules of basketball?
No, we can't.
We have to, because I think the Wizards, who did a lot of complaining and grousing after the lopsided loss that JaVale shot a three looking to avoid a shot clock violation, and it happened a little too early in the shot clock, and there were sour grapes about this. Now, here's how I understand it, Tim. Shot clock is off, end of the game, you lead, they're not fouling, you do not shoot the ball ever.
Absolutely.
That was not the situation.
I know. They were frustrated, and I think it's because it was JaVale.
Thank you.
I think if it was anybody else, if that's Ian Clark, I don't think anybody raises an eyebrow. But I think because it was JaVale and if they felt like they were goofing on him, I think they got a little upset, which I understand. And they're competitive, and they don't want to lose. And they've been playing great basketball since the start of the year. See, unwritten rules, I thought you were going to ask me about whether or not we could find some guys that could shoot in college basketball.
I don't think that's going to be happening really anytime soon. What an ugly game last night. It's too bad. It was kind of a down year for the sport overall. It felt like a down year for the NCAA tournament, too.
May I interrupt? I see the great legendary Lee Jones over there.
Look at that.
Here's Lee Jones.
Are you telling me this man needs to go to a ticket window?
No, I think he's...
Is it a little media will call?
I think he's procuring tickets.
Wow. Look at that. Well, I'm glad that Lee Jones gets to step around the long line and form his own.
By the way,
you know who deserves their own line in this world around here, Tim Roy? It's you.
I'll stop.
I've done a little math on your career because I knew you were going to come out here and visit us.
You did a little math on my career?
Yes. Are you ready?
How did you find out what I earned in 1983?
No, not that kind of math. Not that kind of math you'll be happy to share with the good people. So the Warriors are obviously looking for an NBA record 204th win tonight over the course of three seasons. If that doesn't frame how That's quickly things have turned here, now I don't know what could better than that. You've been with the Warriors since 1995,
right?
Correct?
The Joe Smith draft.
So we were looking, I was looking, what's the worst three-year run you ever had?
Early 2000s.
99 through 2000. It's the 99-2000 season through the end of the 2001-02 season. The Warriors went 57 and lost 189 games over the course of 3 years. That's not only the worst stretch during your tenure, Tim, it's actually the worst stretch in franchise history. If there were ever a guy who deserved to get 204 wins at least over 3 years, it is you, buddy.
Now, there was a 17-win season, right?
There was a 17-win season.
Okay, I have a story about that
book
season.
Ended by like 21, 22 wins.
Yeah, we were 15-33. We beat the Clippers mid-February. We were 15-33, which means we ended the year 2-32.
Do you think Don knew what he was doing due to a point guard in the draft he was looking at?
Yeah, I think so. The other thing about that was he came out of that draft when the Warriors picked Curry. There was a supposed deal on the table where the Warriors were going to pick for the Phoenix Suns and trade him to general manager Steve Kerr. Well, they thought it was going to be Jordan Hill, and then Curry fell to the Warriors, and the Suns, I thought, were excited because they thought they were getting Curry, and Nelly comes out and says he's not going anywhere. And then he as he's walking back, he looked at me and goes, "We got the best passer in the draft."
Nice.
Not the best shooter. He said, "We got the best passer in the draft."
Well, if he only knew where this would go. And it's really amazing. Steph Curry in about 150 games, I think I saw, has hit as many threes as Larry Bird did in his entire career.
It's a new day.
When we sit back and talk about this team, and who knows where this conversation goes over the next 5, 6, 7 years, Tim, we have such an amazing front row seat for all of this, and we're so happy that you'll be explaining all of this to everyone on 95.7 The Game. The Chicago Bulls are one of the most significant teams in the mid-90s the sport has ever seen in terms of historical perspective. But in terms of evolutionary step, this team is always compared to that Bulls team. This team has completely surpassed that Bulls team in terms of evolutionary step. Here's my list. It is the biggest rule changes in the history. The biggest changes are goaltending, allowing a dunk, the shot clock, and the three-point line. But no one embraced the three-point line quite like the Warriors did until about 3 years ago.
And now everybody's falling suit. I mean, you had
everyone.
So many teams. The Warriors are not, you know, they haven't led the league in three-point usage, I think, for 2 years now. Other teams are shooting more threes. And it's really changing the way we play the game. And I think it's also, to me, as important as that, is that the Warriors are changing the way people look at ball movement. And with the number of assists they hand out on a nightly basis, that's remarkable. And it's so much fun to watch, and it sends a great message, you know, that you're an unselfish team. You know, you're going to find good shots because you're passing the ball.
Well, and it's fun to call, too, I would imagine.
Absolutely,
Like you're having more fun with ball movement. Just Baron Davis dribbling out the clock.
Yes.
Baron Davis dribbling. Baron's got the ball, dribbling. 10 seconds left. 5 seconds. Baron has the ball.
Yeah, it was a different era, but it still was one of the most fun teams I ever called.
Oh, without a doubt.
That was insane. In fact, I think Clint Azubuike from that team will sit in with us second and third quarter tonight.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. We will be enjoying that as well. He'll give you a minute or two to catch your breath. How much fun was it to see what Steph Curry did in the corner against Marcin Gortat in that last game? A pump fake into a full, what was that, a Jedi mind trick?
I guess he got him to turn completely around. You know, a pump fake, and he put the ball out to the right, and Gortat just turned like he thought the shot was already gone. And then to follow it up with a made shot, I mean, that's, to me, it's probably top five of the most ridiculous things he's ever done.
It really is. You know what I mean? The one time he put Chris Paul in a blender.
He floored him.
That goes up there.
Down in L.A. That was unbelievable.
It was a
because
hell of a
move. Who he did it to.
Right.
You know? Yeah, who he did it to.
Right. I mean, shaking Gortat's one thing. Chris Paul's another, I guess.
Exactly.
It really is. What do you think is turned Sean Livingston's season around from one that he was struggling in about 3 weeks ago to now he's playing his best ball of the year, like David West, like Andre Iguodala? You think these old guys have been okie-doking us all year?
Well, I think with players with that many miles on the tires, I think they go through stretches where they just can't seem to get their rhythm, their legs underneath them. But I think the coming off that long, heavy road stretch and getting to a series of home games, I think spelt great for, you know, Iguodala. I think it was great for West. It was great for Sean Livingston. I think they got the kind of rest they needed and then got their legs back a little bit and in rhythm. That was a very, very tough stretch the Warriors had, you know, right after the All-Star break and then culminating with the rest game, which they, since that game, they have not lost, by the way, just for those who want to bang the drum on the resting thing. Just saying. But they kind of got their legs back a little bit through the home heavy schedule.
Hey, that night in San Antonio sucked, but the 12 nights that followed it really weren't bad at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? Call me the company guy, but I'll back Steve on that decision every day of the week because I was there, and I know how hard that stretch was. And I think it was the absolute right call. Give everybody's minds right, get their legs right, and look what's happened.
Understanding the fatigue travel can put on a team, even if it's just a one city, but that one city happens to be Denver. How much easier of a path is it for this team if Portland is the eighth seed?
I don't know if it's an easier path if Nurkic comes back and is healthy because he's big and he's talented, but it's easier travel-wise because then, and if 4 or 5 remains Utah Clippers, then you're looking at, if you can get past the first round and get past the second round, you have gone to the conference finals without a flight of more than an hour and 15. And I think that would make a difference. You know, when the Warriors won a couple years ago, that was insane. We had no flight under 3 hours and 15 minutes. And it's just weird.
What do you got coming up on Roundtable this week? I know normally Tuesday night's your night. Are you doing it another night?
We're doing it Thursday night.
Thursday night.
When we come back from Phoenix. And we're going to chat with general manager Bob Myers. Get his thoughts on the season and the acquisition of Matt Barnes and what he looks forward to in the playoffs and just how this whole KD thing has worked out.
Hey, we hear you all the time. Really good to see you today. Thank you so much.
I love what you've done with your lawn, by the
way.
Thank you. I may steal. There's a big chunk I may steal and put in my backyard. That way I don't have to worry about it. Just put it down and I'm done.
I've never seen anyone with a greener thumb than Gianna Franco. I mean, this woman, it's amazing what she has done out here.
I try.
It almost just doesn't look real.
Tim Roy, good to see you, man. Thank you so much. Tim Roy here on the Damon Brewer Show. Great to have him. And, of course, tonight he will have the call beginning at 7 o'clock with his pregame show, tip-off 7:30, Warriors and T-Wolves. That comes up tonight. Next here on 95.7 The Game, we're not making any excuses for the Raiders, but we did hear from Mark Davis today, and he had some interesting things to say about what has happened or what is not going to be happening to the future of the Coliseum. That is next. We have been here an awful lot of days in a row because of everything that's happened. We were here Friday last week. We got here on Sunday to do a little Warrior warm-up. We're here for opening day for the A's. It was a spectacular night, and we're going to reframe that all next hour. It really just was a triumphant night.
It really was.
For the Oakland A's, Dave Cavill, his entire group, everyone who's a part of the Coliseum re-rollout last night, the Ricky Henderson on-field tribute. Ken Korak was just pitch perfect in his emceeing duties for both Ricky Henderson and, of course, his broadcasting idol, Bill King. Was there any doubt that Ken Korak was going to totally stick the landing on that Bill King tribute? There was
no doubt at all.
And he delivered. Everyone delivered. Chris Davis delivered. Santiago Casilla delivered. Stephen Vogt delivered. It was a deliverance. Without the banjo.
Without
the banjo. It really, really was. I don't want to say that the AstroTurf or the new screen or the food trucks or anything like that contributed to what happened last night. But there's also no doubt in my mind that stadiums and the juju and how fans feel, it permeates beginnings of seasons and it permeates young baseball teams. The A's are a young baseball team. I don't think they're going to win 90 games this year. You know, no, not even close. But if they were to shock the world, as sometimes young baseball teams do,
it can happen.
It won't be after a slow start. I'll see what they do tonight. It is game two. But really, a fun debut to a season that a lot of people are just leaning forward, looking to love Oakland, looking to give a little hope, looking to feel like they're going to have a team to root for that is all about their hometown. Ricky Henderson is all about your hometown, Oakland. It's his hometown, too. And it was really a great night last night. Today, Mark Davis came on to talk about why he is leaving your hometown, why he is abandoning the city of Oakland. And it was obvious in what was an incredibly, I thought, fair and honestly straight-up interview with JT the Brick, who did a very good job. Look, you know, I even called JT the day the Raiders decided to move. And I said, look, we all know that Mark Davis will never come on my show. Is he going to come on your show? He said, yeah, he is, eventually. We really hope to get that done. And we talked about how, you know, look, he understands the situation around him, that he spends part of his time in Las Vegas, and he is seen as, you know, a bridge or a liaison between this and that, and that's why he's here and this. No. That's really not it. And I said, you know, you got to do it's a tough situation for you to be in, man.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation. No matter what you do, people are going to say it's soft. He's like, I know. I could ask 8 great questions in a row, and everyone will talk about how they didn't like question number 9. So that's just the world we live in, and those are the lives we've chosen. So you just go in there, and you do it to the best of your ability and pull no punches. And he's just said, man, when in my career have I ever pulled a punch? When have I ever conducted a soft interview? And today he proved that to me again, man. This is why I got a ton of respect for my friend JT, who did an interview today that actually extracted a few things from Mark Davis that I thought were very much going to line up with what I expected to hear from Mark Davis. An actually well-spoken, clearly well-rehearsed to handle this topic now publicly, more so than before when this topic was so brand new. A couple of things that Mark Davis had to say talking to JT the Brick today, it all pointed towards how the A's and Oakland either were in the way or somehow could really never get out of the way. Here is just a little from Mark Davis.
My feeling is if the A's did want to be on that site, the Oakland Coliseum site, to just let us know that we did feel that selfishly we'd like to have it to ourselves, but that if the A's were okay with building there with us, that what we wanted to do was tear down the Coliseum, put in all the infrastructure, build 2 brand new stadiums and some ancillary development, and then both the A's and Raiders would move back into brand new stadiums on that site.
That's what the hope was. Obviously, hope turned to incredible doubt that any of that would ever be accomplished. And that is why when Nevada came with more money than any state has ever thrown at an owner in any walk of sports ever, it was pretty hard for him to turn down. And I got to tell you, you know, I'm not going to have a lot of sympathy. I am not extending him the courtesy of be like, oh, you know, he's got regrets, man. He really does. And you can tell that this hurts. I don't care if it hurts. It's supposed to hurt. Seriously, I hope it hurts you and haunts you for the rest of your life, because the amount of damage you're doing to your team that you don't even see yet because you're so blinded by the money and the instant acclaim that this is going to get for you, it disappoints me. It really does. But, you know, I knew he was going to put it on the A's. I knew that he was going to put it on Oakland. But I also know that as much as I would like to clap back at all of that, there are levels and layers of truth to it that cannot be denied. Again, here's a little bit more from Mark Davis.
Oakland was never in competition with Los Angeles, or if in fact there was something going on with Las Vegas. They were never in competition. The only people Oakland was in competition with was themselves. And if they could have come up with a deal that would have given us the land, either leased it or gave it to us at reasonable terms and gave us the infrastructure, and we had the ability to go out and find a developer or somebody that would fill that funding gap, we may have been able to do something on that site.
He talked about how, you know, he had worked over this with several mayors. And when Libby Schaaf came into office, they did meet, and they did have conversations in person together. But she never once moved with urgency in the year window kind of in between the Carson gray area and Las Vegas really stepping up to the plate. There was a year there that she needed to attack with a certain amount of, you know, I guess just intent on, all right, so we're not going to come up with a magic dollar amount, but we are going to give you full attention. And let's see if we can see what the A's are doing. Let's see if we can, since you two people are, I'm talking about the A's and the Raiders,
right,
like they're people. Since you two organizations are on, you know, like your timelines could both be described as Dumb and Dumber. Like, there's no doubt that Dumb and Dumber were the timelines that both the A's and the Raiders were marching on at the most important part of all of this, which isn't right now Event Horizon. The most important time was 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And it didn't happen then. You know, the city of Oakland, when it was Event Horizon, when it was go time, when it was, oh my God, the bell tolls for thee, then the city of Oakland came with letters. Not a real proposal. And this goes back to the fairy tale of Libby Schaaf and her shovel-ready comments that she had. A complete farcical fairy tale made to save her own political climate. But, I mean, shovel-ready means construction starts tomorrow, and that is the single least accurate description of whatever the hell Oakland was offering the NFL. And, oh, by the way, the city of Oakland only walked down the path the NFL told them not to. Don't do Floyd Gephardt. Don't do Ronnie Lott Fortress Investment. Those are the two fastest ways to make sure we're not paying attention to whatever this is. What did Oakland do?
They did it anyway.
And Mark even said that, saying basically, Oakland went out of its way to either make no move or explicitly fish in the only pond they were told not to fish in. So how honest was their commitment to changing things or turning this around? And what is the most disappointing thing is that this whole thing feels like the Dumb and Dumber timelines just both ran out. And that's the most disappointing thing. I really believe that had Lou Wolf stepped down 3 or 4 years ago, it would have opened the Dave Cavill window of change that we will hopefully see in a year or two from now. And had the A's set in motion the plans to move, it would have changed the landscape that this deal ultimately never happened in. And that's enough to make me puke right here on this lovely AstroTurf underneath our fantastic double tent setup.
Don't do that.
I won't do that. But we are going to have our friend Dave Benz join us, and we haven't taken a call all show. Dave Benz, your phone calls, and Steph Curry singing Disney songs next hour on the Damon Bruce Show.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.